The battle for political control doesn't begin with public outrage or national headlines. It begins quietly, with a pen, a conference room, and a handful of people drawing lines most Americans will never see. District lines, invisible boundaries that shape the power of a vote before it's ever cast. And right now, in Texas, that map is being rewritten in a way that could alter the balance of Congress for the next decade. On the surface, this looks like a redistricting fight. Every 10 years, states redraw their congressional districts based on new census data. That part's legal, normal even. But what's happening now isn't routine. It's an aggressive effort to solidify party control while the demographics of the country shift underneath. Texas Republicans are proposing a new map designed to create 5 additional GOP seats, not by winning more voters, but by rearranging where they live on paper. The new lines don't follow natural communities or shared interests. They carve through cities, neighborhoods, even blocks, fracturing voting power and diluting voices that challenge the status quo. To stop the vote, Democratic lawmakers in the Texas state legislature left the state entirely. They fled to block the vote from happening, denying the GOP the quorum it needed to pass the new map. It's not the first time this tactic has been used. In 2003, Democrats pulled a similar move during another redistricting fight, but this time, the response has escalated beyond political gamesmanship. Allies of President Donald Trump are now pushing to use federal law enforcement, specifically the FBI, to compel those lawmakers to return. That's where we are now, a state-level battle turning into a federal pressure campaign over a redrawn map. One side trying to stall the clock, the other trying to force the pen across the page. This isn't just about Texas. California, New York, and Illinois have responded with warnings of their own. If Texas pushes through with this redistricting strategy, they'll do the same in reverse. Each state threatening to redraw its own lines in favor of Democrats. What was once a localized fight is now the beginning of a national standoff, a political tit-for-tat built on cartography. The maps are becoming the battlefield. But the public rarely sees this process for what it is. Gerrymandering is designed to be invisible. The power of it lies in the fact that it feels bureaucratic, technical, boring, a procedural necessity tucked behind census data and legal jargon. It doesn't feel like oppression. It doesn't feel like suppression. It feels like paperwork, and that's the point. Most people never ask who draws the map. They just know when they go to vote, something feels off. Their community doesn't vote the way it used to. Their district changed. Their representative no longer seems to speak for the people living around them. And because those changes happen on a 10-year cycle, by the time people realize what's been done, it's already locked in for another decade. The truth is, redistricting has always been about control. The term gerrymander dates back to 1812, when Massachusetts Governor Elbridge Gerry approved a district shaped so oddly that it reminded people of a salamander. But the practice goes far beyond funny shapes. At its core, gerrymandering is about two tactics, packing and cracking. Packing means concentrating opposition voters into one district so their influence is limited to a single seat. Cracking means spreading them thinly across multiple districts so they can't form a majority anywhere. Both tactics are legal if done along partisan lines, but become illegal if done explicitly by race. The problem is that, in America, politics and race have never been cleanly separated. So when partisan gerrymandering happens in places already shaped by historical segregation, the impact is often racial, whether that was the intent or not. But this fight isn't centered on race in the way it might have been 30 years ago. This time, it's about population growth, specifically the surge in Latino communities. The Hispanic population in the United States is now over 20%, surpassing Black Americans, who remain around 13%. And that shift matters, not just for culture, but for voting power. In places like Texas, Arizona, Florida, and California, the growing political influence of Spanish-speaking voters is reshaping the electoral map. Republicans know this, And while some Hispanic voters, particularly Cubans in Florida, lean Republican, the party's strategy across the country doesn't reflect a genuine embrace of that bloc. In fact, much of the current redistricting effort seems built on the assumption that too much demographic change is a threat, not an opportunity. That's the contradiction: chasing minority votes while designing systems that contain them. This is about future-proofing political power before the numbers tip too far in the other direction. It's not about responding to what voters want now. It's about locking in control for a future where the old strategies might not work. The map then becomes not just a tool, but a defense mechanism. The danger here isn't just partisan imbalance, it's erosion. Erosion of trust, erosion of representation, erosion of the idea that the vote actually matters. When district lines become tools for pre-selecting winners, the entire system shifts from democracy to something more curated, more manufactured. The ballot still exists, but the outcome is padded, safe, controlled, and the public once again is left reacting to a game they didn't know had already started. Gerrymandering doesn't exist in a vacuum. The maps being drawn today aren't fresh. They're layered on top of decades of decisions that already carved people up by race, income, and perceived value. To understand how we got here, you have to go back to the original lines, the ones drawn not for voting, but for loans, for schools, for survival. Redlining wasn't about politics in the traditional sense. It was about denying opportunity based on geography. In the 1930s, federal housing policies helped banks draw maps of risky neighborhoods. Those maps were color-coded, and the red zones were almost always low-income, majority-minority communities. Once redlined, these neighborhoods couldn't access home loans, business funding, or insurance. They were frozen in place, boxed out of wealth, while the rest of the country built equity through real estate. That matters here because those same neighborhoods never recovered. They didn't get rezoned, they didn't get refunded, they just stayed poor, underdeveloped, and politically weak. And now, decades later, those are the same areas that show up on political maps as low turnout or safely split. They're the places most vulnerable to being cracked or packed, not because of who lives there now, but because of how that place was shaped long before anyone started counting ballots. But this isn't about guilt. It's about infrastructure, about the way political parties, both of them, build strategy on top of old scaffolding without ever questioning what that scaffolding was designed to do. It's easy to say gerrymandering is about partisanship, that it's not racial. But if the maps are built on neighborhoods that were segregated by design, and those neighborhoods still haven't been economically repaired, then the effect is clear, even if the intent is up for debate. Still, this isn't a story about the past. It's about how the past feeds the present. It's about how we pretend every redistricting cycle is a clean slate, when in reality, it's just the next move in a long game of engineered imbalance. And now that the country is changing faster than the parties can adapt, the urgency to redraw the lines, to reassert control, is back on the table. But here's what's different this time. The tension isn't centered around black voters anymore. The shift in population and power is moving through Latino communities. And that shift is real. In states like Texas, the Latino vote is young, growing, and increasingly difficult to categorize. It doesn't behave the way either party expects, and that makes it unpredictable. To a political strategist, unpredictability is a liability. So instead of building trust or making new coalitions, the map makers go back to what they know, draw lines that reduce risk. It's not always explicit. No one writes "contain the Spanish vote" on a whiteboard in a campaign office, but the maps do it anyway. They split areas that have grown too fast. They lump high-density communities into existing strongholds. They trim just enough population off the edge of a district to weaken its swing potential. It's surgical, legal, and devastating. That's the uncomfortable truth neither side wants to admit. Gerrymandering doesn't just silence voices, it edits the future. It takes a rising demographic and slows its impact. It buys time for the losing side of history to regroup. And while that might sound like smart politics, it's not democracy. It's a delay tactic, a dam built against inevitability. You can't separate that from the infrastructure of redlining. You can't draw new lines on top of old wounds and act like they're neutral. But you also don't need to scream racism at every turn. Sometimes the clearest betrayal isn't what's said, it's what's maintained, what's kept in place, what's quietly reinforced every 10 years by people who claim they're just doing what the numbers tell them to do. And the numbers, they lie, because numbers can be arranged just like districts, just like people. Right now, Republicans hold 25 of Texas's 38 congressional seats. Democrats have 12, with one seat vacant. That's already a 66% majority, even though the state's population isn't anywhere near two-thirds conservative. And under the new redistricting proposal, the Republican Party could flip 5 more seats, raising that count to 30 out of 38. That's nearly 80% of the congressional delegation, in a state that's barely 40% white and growing more diverse every year. That's not representation, that's engineering, and you can't separate that from the actual numbers because the numbers are the story. According to the most recent data, Texas's Hispanic population now makes up just over 39% of the state, officially overtaking white Texans, who sit just under that at about 38.8%. That shift happened quietly, but it's monumental. The demographic that built modern Texas, politically, economically, and culturally, is no longer the majority. Yet when you look at who holds power, from the legislature to Congress, the maps haven't caught up. Or rather, they've been drawn not to catch up. It's the same story nationally. In 2000, there were about 35 million Hispanic Americans in the United States. By 2023, that number had jumped to nearly 65 million. That's a 77% increase in a little over 2 decades. The black population also grew during that time, from 36.2 million to about 48.3 million, but at a much slower rate, roughly 33%. Meanwhile, the non-Hispanic white population has been shrinking. In 1990, it made up 75% of the country. By 2023, that dropped to 58%. That's not just a trend, it's a shift in national identity. What that means is simple. The electoral base is changing fast, but instead of meeting that change with new ideas or new coalitions, some parties are responding by redrawing the lines. They're not trying to win over new voters. They're trying to reduce the power of the ones they already know they'll lose. And if you control the map, you don't need to control the majority. You just need to control the lines. That's what this fight in Texas is really about. It's not about fairness or process or following the law. It's about math, political math. The kind that turns a near 50-50 state into a 30-seat Republican stronghold with a few strokes of a pen. It's about neutralizing communities that are growing too fast, voting too blue, or organizing too well. And in this case, that means Latino communities. It means younger voters. It means people who haven't traditionally held power, but are starting to show up in ways that shift outcomes. You can see it in the shapes of the districts themselves. These aren't natural boundaries. They cut across zip codes, carve up neighborhoods, and run lines straight through cities that were built as political blocks. In some cases, they'll even pull a single apartment complex into a different district from the next building over. That's not about serving the people. That's about controlling the numbers. And once those lines are drawn, they're locked in for 10 years. 10 years of policy shaped by an artificial map. 10 years of underrepresentation baked into the system. 10 years where the majority in power can write laws, appoint judges, redraw school funding, and set the tone for what gets passed and what gets buried, all before a single vote is even cast. The public doesn't get to see this process unfold in real time. Most people aren't reading census data or following redistricting hearings. They just know something feels off. They vote, but the outcome doesn't change. They show up, but their district gets more complicated every cycle. The names on the ballot don't reflect the needs in their neighborhood, and the people making the laws feel more distant every year. That's not accidental, it's strategic. And when those maps are drawn with that intent, the damage isn't theoretical, it's structural. This isn't about fairness anymore. It's about maintenance, holding onto power as long as possible, even if it means warping the system that gives that power legitimacy in the first place. And while the courts have ruled that partisan gerrymandering is legal as long as it's not racial, the reality is race and politics in America are deeply entangled. The neighborhoods being cracked and packed didn't just happen. They were shaped by redlining, by economic neglect, by school zoning, by transportation access. So when a party draws a map today, it's not drawing from scratch, it's drawing on top of every decision that came before. Which means we're not just fighting over this decade's elections, we're fighting over whose version of the future gets to survive the map. And that's a war you can't see on the news. You feel it at the ballot box, when the box was built to break you before you even showed up. Maps aren't just boundaries, they're blueprints. Once they're drawn, they define where money goes, how laws get written, and which voices carry weight in the rooms that decide policy. When a district gets cracked apart, it doesn't just lose representation, it loses leverage, it loses access, it loses its ability to say, "We matter," and have anyone in office actually be required to listen. That's the quiet power of gerrymandering. It doesn't censor people outright. It just rearranges them until they're too scattered to be heard. And it works. Texas proves that. A state nearly split down the middle, racially, ideologically, generationally, is being carved up in a way that locks out the very people who are making it grow. And once those lines are in place, they don't just affect elections. They shape laws, immigration policy, education funding, infrastructure priorities, healthcare coverage, all of it. That's the thing most people don't realize. Gerrymandering isn't just about who wins a seat. It's about how decisions get made long after the votes are counted. The party that draws the map decides which communities become policy priorities and which ones get cut out. That's why the stakes are so high right now. Not just for Texas, but for every state watching to see how far this can go before the courts or the public step in. If the new maps stand, the GOP will have engineered near total control of Texas's federal delegation for another decade, using tools the average voter doesn't even know exist. And if California and New York respond in kind, if the national map becomes a chessboard of revenge gerrymanders, then what we're looking at isn't democracy. It's a cold war waged in quiet rooms, a war where the winners never have to outvote their opponents. They just have to outdraw them. And the people caught in the middle, they're left believing that elections don't change anything, because in many cases, they don't. Not when the districts are built to cancel out certain voters before they ever walk into a polling place. Not when the outcome is shaped by the invisible hand of cartography, not the collective voice of the public. That's what makes this moment dangerous. The map isn't just being used to win, it's being used to stall, to hold the line against inevitable change, against demographic shifts, against youth, against momentum. Gerrymandering becomes a dam, holding back the future long enough to protect the present for just a little while longer. But the longer that dam holds, the more pressure builds behind it. And at some point, that pressure breaks everything. That's where we're headed. A system that pretends to be representative while being deliberately designed not to be. A political map that doesn't reflect the people, just the fear of losing power. And when that happens, the damage goes beyond voting. It breeds distrust, apathy, disillusion. People start pulling away, not because they don't care, but because the game feels rigged. And the truth is, it is. What happens when that truth becomes common knowledge? When more people realize the lines were never drawn for them? What happens when those invisible boundaries become visible? Because once you see the map for what it really is, you can't unsee it. And at that point, the question changes from who's in power to who's willing to challenge the map itself. One story, one truth, one ripple at a time. This is the Ripple Effect, powered by the Truth Project.